Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we turn from the Beltway to Broadway, from Tehran to Tottenville, and set the week in local politics. No late-night major announcement Saturday from the de Blasio campaign, as there was from the White House, but still plenty to touch on with WNYC political reporter Bridget Bergen and Andrew Hawkins, Crane's New York Business political reporter. Welcome, both of you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So every afternoon, political reporters get an email from the Transition 2013 press secretary. Bridget, you're smiling and nodding. You've seen too many of these already. And it contains the next day's schedule for the mayor-elect. We open it with eagerness to see what's coming. And today it says, Mayor-elect de Blasio is in New York City. There are no public events. So we're probably not going to find out who the next police commissioner is today.
It doesn't seem likely. To be totally fair, his transition team did send out an email yesterday talking about a speech that he'll be giving at Columbia University today. There's a summit on the future of children in New York, and de Blasio is scheduled to deliver a speech where we anticipate he will be talking about his pre-K program, which was a very, signature part of his campaign. And you had to get press credentials from the campaign and also through the university to be able to attend it and to cover it. However, we don't anticipate that will be a speech where you would, hear about the new police commissioner.
Right. And just to be clear, as you know, I'm moderating a panel for Columbia University after that speech about the future of children in New York City. But it's not a public event. The public can't just show up to that.
Exactly.
So just to be clear what that is and what that isn't. So here's what news there is. Because, Andy, as de Blasio transitions in, Michael Bloomberg transitions out, and last week he announced that his final budget is a balanced budget. You broke it down for Crane's. Higher tax revenue as the economy recovers, more money from medallions, the taxi sales under the new taxi program with the outer borough cabs, et cetera, and the first balanced budget in many years. In fact, I think part of what's so unusual is that for decades, no mayor has left office and left the next mayor on day one with anything but a big deficit, right?
It's been since, I think, 1975, the last time that an outgoing mayor had a balanced budget for the incoming mayor. The city is required by law, of course, to have a balanced budget every year. So in some respects, it's the timing of this particular announcement that is the most significant. It's Bloomberg trying to end on a high note, as he has been. And he wants, to sort of send the signal that he was, the guy that was the fiscal steward. That's why we elected him for a third term. And it's supposed to be a gift to the de Blasio administration. But of course, if you read between the lines, it looks more like, one of those fruitcakes that you get for the holidays. It's, it's sweet and looks nice on the outside, but it's not the best present to get.
Well, go ahead and read between the lines. What's the sour fruit in there?
I think it takes the biggest point of it is that it takes a huge bargaining chip away from de Blasio. It gives him this balanced budget, and therefore he can't claim poverty when everyone comes calling for their chunk of the pie. For instance, the labor unions, you've got over 100 unions that are operating on expired contracts right now. And so without a deficit, without a $2 billion budget deficit to sort of point to and say, hey, look, guys, I'm sorry. I'd love to give you these retroactive raises that you've gone without for so many years, but I've got this budget deficit I have to deal with. He instead is being handed a balanced budget that he'll have to then find some other way to deny the unions of their retroactive raises without, because there's sort of the consensus is he's not going to be able to provide this billions of dollars in raises that the unions are owed. He wouldn't be able to give that to them without some sort of tax increase, revenue raiser, or something like that.
And I will overlook your mixing pie and cake metaphors in that answer.
Thank you.
And ask Bridget about just how slow this transition is going to go and the rollout of people who are waiting to find out who they're going to be, police commissioner, budget director, first deputy mayor, schools chancellor. It's been a few weeks since Election Day, but we see that the transition co-chair, Carl Weisbrod, told reporters over the weekend, quote, Nothing is completed on January 1st. That's Inauguration Day. He says, I've been in New York City government for 35 years. I've seen many, many administrations transition in. I haven't seen one that has completed everything by January 1st. So what is he telling us there?
I think it's about setting some expectations. We know that when Bloomberg came into office, by this point, he had announced Ray Kelly as the police commissioner. But, you know, what we also know is his transition continued through January. There were appointments that were still being made through the end of January. And so I think Team de Blasio at this point is trying to remind folks that the most important thing for them to do is to pick the right people for these positions, and that, you know, no matter when they make these announcements, they're better off naming the people that they think will do the best job, that will fulfill, you know, the mandate and the values of the de Blasio administration, as opposed to someone who, you know, comes in and then doesn't have the track record that they want.
Why wouldn't they have already known, though, who they want in the context of all those criteria? De Blasio, like the rest of them, had been campaigning for a year. He always had a clear vision of what he wanted to do. He campaigned very consistently throughout the year on his themes. And then by the end, of course, of primary season, he was a runaway winner. And then there was never a real contest in the 6 weeks or whatever it was of the general election campaign. You would think during that time, when he was already in effect mayor-elect, in all but name, that they would have figured out exactly who their school's chancellor and police commissioner and people would be.
Who's to say that they haven't already figured that out? I mean, I think one of the, you know, signature, you know, what makes the de Blasio team so unique is they have been completely strategic in their messaging. And who's to say that this isn't just a question of timing, that they have decided that they are going to wait and then make a, you know, a big announcement with multiple appointments, as opposed to announcing people one-off and putting them essentially in front of the media firing range for a period of time?
I mean, this is a guy who you know, learned his political chops at the feet of Andrew Cuomo, amongst other people. Andrew Cuomo, as we all know, is the micromanager in chief. He knows how to keep a tight lid on the rollout of information and how to control the news media. And I think de Blasio is doing the same thing here.
This is one of the lesser known pieces of the de Blasio resume. In fact, I think a lot of people who knew him as public advocate didn't realize some of the various Democratic political establishment connections that he had. You're right. He worked for Cuomo when Cuomo was the HUD secretary, right? Department of Housing and Urban Development in the Clinton administration. De Blasio was the regional administrator for this area, and he was manager of Hillary Clinton's Senate campaign, her first one in New York State back in 2000. So he's got these Clinton connections. He's got these Cuomo connections. And so not from nothing does he come with his political chops.
And that's, you know, these are worlds that he can choose from when filling some of these really important roles, if he so decides. I mean, some of the names that were floating very early on were folks that had various Clinton and Cuomo connections. And so that's going to be something to keep a watch on.
He also does have the 60-member transition team, which has been announced. But those aren't the appointees. Those are the people who help to vet the appointees and do other things to set up whoever's going to actually be in the government. And you did an analysis in Crane's that shows almost 50% of the transition team were donors to the campaign, have contributed a total of $50,000, which actually isn't that
it's
much
not,
money.
No,
so
not.
Is this a scandal? Is this business as usual? Is this, of course, the people who would wind up on the team are people who support him. So it's not like quid pro quo. It's, of course, these are the people who would have been making some donations.
I think it's business as usual. I think it's the understanding is that's sort of, you know, the bone that you throw to some folks who have been generous to your campaign. You give them a little say in the how the administration proceeds thereon. And so it's not total shock. It's not a scandal at all. I think it just, you know, sort of adds a layer of intrigue maybe to the whole process. Obviously, these are going to be folks who are heavily invested in his success. They made a bet on him as the candidate. And so naturally, they're going to have some say. It's folks, and they're, you know, keep in mind, it's a 60-person team. It's a huge group of people. I think Bloomberg had something like 20 or 30. So it's way larger than that. And these are not going to be people who are all going to be making the really important decisions. That's going to be a much tighter circle of people.
This is more people than work for the public advocate's office, isn't it?
Well, so. And to be fair, Bloomberg's transition actually had 56 people. So it's been growing. I mean, transition teams have been getting progressively larger.
And Bridget, our WNYC transportation desk, transportationnation.org, if you have some free time, pointed out that there are experts and activists in all sorts of fields, from criminal justice to poverty and education, on this transition team, but no one who could be considered a transportation expert, no bike advocate, no car advocate. There is one former MTA chief I could think of who has some free time right now, but is it surprising that there's nobody transportation-oriented per se on the transition team?
I think that the transportation advocates definitely want to be engaged in the transition. And we, you know from that analysis that Transportation Nation did that, you know, at least Gene Rushenoff of the Straphangers campaign was disappointed in, you know, not having someone who is directly involved in transportation policy on this team. But, you know, I think the de Blasio transition team reflects to a certain extent how he has framed what he wants this transition to be about. And at the cornerstone of it has always been diversity, and that's very much reflected in this transition. Beth Fertig wrote for schoolbook.org that about 10 of the people on the transition team are people who are with education or child advocacy backgrounds, which also is very much in keeping with how he has framed his transition. So, you know, I think we can look at things that it's lacking. I mean, the Daily News has made a lot of hay of the fact that there are a lot of religious leaders reflected on this team, but there are no Catholics reflected on this transition team. But, you know, you can't how many people can you put on a transition team?
There's already 60. So,
yeah.
What's de Blasio's religious background?
He's Catholic. But I don't think he's not a practicing or a particularly religious Catholic. But he came from the liberation theology section of the Catholic Church when he was doing a lot of his sort of charitable work in his younger days
way
in South America,
when.
Right, when he was running around with the Sandinistas, as they say.
Anything else notable in this final budget blueprint from Bloomberg?
I think so. I think that what's also notable is the number of one-shot revenue raisers that the mayor has relied on to balance this budget. With you've got the sale of 200 taxi medallions and some underutilized property that was put up for sale as well. These are things that the de Blasio administration will have to reckon with when he comes into office, especially the taxi sales. That is, in essence, the mayor sort of throwing a challenge to his successor to either support the outer borough street hail green cabs that have been out on the streets lately. He's going to, you know, because there's going to be more medallions up for sale. De Blasio will either have to embrace that plan or alter it in a significant way, really, at the onset, if he wants to keep those revenues up and keep that those medallions up for sale.
Andrew Hawkins from Crane's New York Business, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
And Bridget Bergen, WNYC political reporter. Before you go, just one other thought about that sort of balanced budget. I know one teacher who supported de Blasio, who's thinking about her expired contract, is basically this. I know that full retroactive pay, because Bloomberg and the city workers have not had a contract in years, full retroactive pay is a lot to ask, and it's a huge expense that would put the de Blasio campaign behind the eight ball right away. That said, she says, they have to give me something for my back pay, almost as a gesture or an indicator that they're really different from the Bloomberg camp. Do you think that's indicative of how a lot of the unionized workers, public sector workers, feel and where it might go?
You know, the statement that we got right after the Bloomberg administration put out their statement about the balanced budget was from Harry Nespoli, chairman of the Municipal Labor Union. And it was a very skeptical, you know, this looks great if it's actually accurate, but then went on to say that, you know, the city's municipal employees assume that, you know, the prerequisite for bargaining is being able to do it in good faith, and has said that the Bloomberg administration has not done that. And so I think there will be an expectation on a part of the city's labor unions that the de Blasio administration will come to the table with a different perspective than the Bloomberg administration. But what we know from that budget announcement is there is no magic pot of money sitting around to pay for those retroactive raises. And so it will require the de Blasio administration to either cut from somewhere else or to find a new way to raise revenue.
All right. Plenty of Monday morning politics in New York City, whether appointees are being announced or not, until city council cannot filibuster those nominees, right?
Not quite the same way that the Senate could have filibustered at one point.
They don't even get to weigh in, right? I mean, they can say anything they want in a news conference, but they don't have to approve the next police commissioner, the next school's chancellor. There's nothing like that, right?
No.
The mayor
no.
just has the power to appoint. All right.
Indeed.
WNYC political reporter Bridget Burke.